This program is brought to you by Podcast One Sports. They're the premier football family, attacking each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. A former first-round pick, Pro Bowler, and current head coach of the University of Michigan, and the Patriarch, a national champion and renowned coach. While they're known for football, their legacy is so much more. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast with Jim and Jack Harbaugh.
Welcome to another episode of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, and this is the post-New Year's edition. This is the first episode of 2018, and we figured we'd go back and take a look at the best episodes of 2017, and this is right after the Outback Bowl, so hopefully we are victorious and 1-0 in 2018, but these best of segments are compiled in chronological order from our first episode to our most recent ones, and we start with Adam Schefter talking about his honorary captaincy, then we go to Big Cat and PFT from Barstool Sports talking about award-winning listeners and how they awarded Coach Harbaugh the Football Guy of the Year. Then we've got some stories from Joni Crean about her dad, our favorite pod father, Jack Harbaugh, getting thrown out of a Little League coaching game and having to watch the outcome of the game in the outfield bleachers with his parents when they were in town. And then Joni talks about being a hot splicer and helping with the film construction for Jack when he was a head coach. Then John Falk talks a little bit about Coach Harbaugh and managing the painting crew when Coach Jim was a student athlete at the University of Michigan, and how they painted the whole entire bathroom white, sinks, toilets, everything. So that was a little funny story that we enjoyed having John on to tell us about. And then George Whitfield talks about the best piece of advice for high school players and talks about how you need to focus on your weaknesses and try and turn those into strengths instead of just leaning on your strengths and trying to make those stronger. And Randy and Jason Sklar share a story about their Little League baseball coaching and how they, I guess, were prepared to get into an altercation with a rival manager until he divulged his appreciation for them as radio hosts, and things de-escalated pretty quickly. Sarah Harbaugh talks about her Jack, little Jack Jr., and how he doesn't like losing and doesn't take it very well, but she's trying to help him with it, and she was awesome to be on with us. Then we had Judge Judy on the week following, and she talks about honesty and taking responsibility for your actions and working hard, and really espoused a lot of the same ideas and philosophies that our co-hosts do. Then Rich Eisen came on the show, and the following week talked about athleticism and performance at the combine, and then talked about his time at ESPN and some of his memories of Stuart Scott. Then we have Ric Flair talking about his time wrestling in North Korea and joining Muhammad Ali as a peace entourage a couple decades ago. And then Desmond Howard came on, talked about striking the iconic Heisman pose in the end zone. So we've got a couple minutes of him talking about that. Then we had John Calipari coming on and talking about recruiting respectable players and players that have appreciation for their family members, their mom, their dad, good eye contact, really good people first. Adam Carolla talked about how to be funny, which Jack Harbaugh absolutely loved. And then got another segment for Adam Carolla, from him, for it lasts about 4 minutes, where he talks about how to be successful in life. And says life's a lot like football, and just work hard and don't worry about the pay necessarily or the results or the outcome. But if you keep working, good things are going to happen for you. And then the final segment about a 10-minute story about Jack and Jim getting into a disagreement and then giving each other the silent treatment. And then finally, Coach Jim plucking about 12 nose hairs from Coach Jack's nostril. So if that's not a way to close it out, I don't know what is. But I hope you enjoyed the best of episode, our first episode of 2018. We look forward to getting back to you with some new stuff. I know it's going to be a great year. Happy New Year to you, and keep on listening. We appreciate all your support of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
A big treat for Jackie and myself at the game is to watch that coin flip and to see you out there and with the players, and that had to be something, because I know the 111,000 people at the University of Michigan appreciated it.
Well, yeah, that was some kind of ovation you got, Adam. I've ranked that probably third in the top three.
Coach, I will say this.
Not quite as loud as Jordan or third.
Well, that's very disappointing and very, very disappointing.
Well, there's been – There's been 20-some games. Come on, you're in the top three.
When I wandered out there, I actually thought, I'm like, oh, I wonder if I will even get any type of ovation.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I would have been thinking, too.
I've been in the stadium enough to know when there's that quiet little soft applause that, you know, you just go, oh, there's someone there? Okay. Okay.
But yeah, courtesy. The courtesy applause.
I actually heard it, which I was surprised by.
It was loud and thunderous. What are you talking about? It was. I took my headsets off, and I could hear through my headsets. Then I took them off. I go, wow, man, Adam's getting a heck of a round of applause here. This is
well, I was thinking
awesome.
That if the game hadn't gone your way there, that might have been the loudest applause of the day. So thankfully, everything worked out in the end.
Well, Tom Brady said the same thing when he came last year. He was honorary captain the Colorado game, and we got down in that game early. It was 21 points, and we had like 7, and He was nervous as well. So I was getting.
But
hey, you did your job.
And I was getting texts, and I was starting to think, boy, I'm going to be barred from ever coming back to campus ever again. So thankfully, your team prevailed and pulled through and responded to the challenge at that point in time, because I was getting very worried about my future at Michigan.
Well, you wouldn't have been barred from campus, but
Michigan Stadium,
football stadium.
Yes,
we would have had
yes.
to take a hard long look at that. What's an award-winning listener?
So we have a yearly award show called The Takeys. It's kind of a playoff of, you know, the Oscars and the Emmys and the ESPYs and all these award shows that really don't mean a lot. But we have The Takeys, and that's actually where you won Football Guy of the Year award. And then at the end of it, we give podcast listeners of the year award, and our listeners, just coincidentally, no bias, have won podcast listener of the year awards 2 times in a row. So, like I said, it's a total coincidence that our specific podcast listeners are the best listeners in the world, but that's 2 times coming, so they're back-to-back listeners.
How do you think they're shaping up for winning the award for the third consecutive year?
Well, what we like to do is when the takeies come around, we like to kind of use it as a threat. So we say, you know, you better really subscribe and rate it 5 stars. It would be a real shame if you guys didn't win the takey award for award-winning listeners. So right now, it's like kind of the off season. The takeies are in the summer. So they're probably resting on their laurels a little
right.
bit.
Right, it's like
fat.
If you have a family vacation planned to Disneyland for your kids, maybe like 3 or 4 months out in the future, every now and again, if they bring home like a D or an F on their report card, you're like, wow, it'd be a real shame if we didn't go to Disneyland this summer.
Yeah,
and so that's kind of how we do it. It's like a carrot and a stick situation.
Motivation. This is Coach Jim again, guys. I really appreciate being Football Guy of the Year on your show. Means a lot. Much appreciated. Is there some kind of plaque or trophy or?
Yes.
Are you going to threaten? Are you going to threaten him? Are you going to threaten him?
Trophy?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Like he's got to win it again.
Threaten you next year.
No, I don't have to win again. But can I get the trophy?
Yeah. We got to get you the trophy, but we wanted to give it to you in person.
In the mail?
We owe you a trophy. Oh. We owe you a trophy. We're going to make one. It's
awesome.
Going to look great. You're
awesome.
Going to put it up. It's going to be the best.
Joni, when you were the bat girl for the Sheriff All Stars, when I was coaching the team.
Yeah.
And then you were the bad girl. What do you remember most about that experience?
You chewed rotten and
what?
You got thrown out of a game that your parents were at. You had to go sit in center field. Those are the two things I remember.
You know what? I thought you were going
to
talk about chewing the rocks, because you used to come over to me and said, Dad, you're going to swallow one
it's
of those.
Rock.
You're going to swallow one of those rocks. But
then you sent me out to get a bigger one so you wouldn't swallow it.
But I didn't know that you'd bring up when I got thrown out of the game when my parents were there and they maybe go sit in center field.
Poor mom and dad.
My mom came out to sit beside me, and the first thing she said is, Jack, why do you do that? It's one of the things
I don't know why you got thrown out either. I don't remember why you got thrown out.
Oh, Rusty. What was Rusty's last name?
I'm sure you should be vindicated.
He coached the Baskin-Robbins team.
I forgot his last name.
Forgot his name, too.
About.
But he was coaching the Baskin-Robbins team, which was one of our competitors. And then we're playing another game, and he's umpiring. He's umpiring, you know, the game.
That's a conflict of interest.
And that's what I told him. And then that's when he said, you're gone! Threw me right out of the game. When you were 8 years old here at the University of Michigan, we were in the old building there on the corner of State and Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
You would come in on a Saturday morning during the off season, And you and I would cut up the film. I'd look through the film, and I'd find a cover one, and I'd take a little piece, cut it with scissors, put a little piece of scotch tape on the end, and stick it up on the wall. And in our office, it was completely surrounded with film, old film, 16 millimeter film hanging down from the wall. And then you would take them, and I'd put them on each one of your fingers. Describe how that all, what kind of a system that we had.
Well, we had them on all fingers, forearms, and my face, and we walked down, and you'd hot splice them, and I learned to use the hot splicer machine to put the films together so it was seamless when you went to watch it. So talk about a game evolving.
Oh, yeah.
There's no such thing like that now. No. It's amazing. But, yeah, those were good. That's a credit to you as a parent for involving me into what you did on a daily basis, which helped me to love the game of football and what my dad did for a living and feel some ownership to it. So John and Jim had their ownership on the field and in locker rooms. And as a girl, you found a way to involve me. And so I always had some ownership in the family business.
Tell the story about when Jim came early. I think it was his freshman year, and Bo wanted him here for the summer. So he put him to work with you in the equipment room.
Well, it's what happened is when you have a football player that we want to keep around during the summer, we always gave him a job. So Jim was the painter in the football building. We had two or three other guys working with him. Well, I made Jim my supervisor. So
as a freshman,
well, he was a good man. You know, I knew right away he was going to be a leader.
You should have checked with Jackie on that. I don't think that guy has ever painted anything his entire life.
Well, that was John Gall. We got mad at me the one time.
Just the one time.
We painted the sinks.
Yeah, I said, you know, it's my fault. I said, man, I need you to paint the bathroom. So they did. The sinks, the toilets, the stalls. And when I said, oh, my God, guys, we got
a problem.
Yeah, we have a problem. You said we have a problem. Bo's going to be down here in a few minutes. Let's get this. So next thing you know, Bo walks in. Falk, what happened to this bathroom? Why is everything white? The toilets, the stalls, the room, the sinks, everything is painted white. What did you do? And I said, hey, it's my fault, Bo. I told Jimmy Hardball.
Yeah, it's my fault.
and he did.
Wasn't me, Bo.
It wasn't me. I told Jimmy, and he did. I mean, so I learned that.
He's coachable.
He's coachable. He does what he tells you to do, you know.
One piece of advice, George, for high school quarterbacks, right? If you've got to say one thing to quarterbacks that are trying to make it to the collegiate level, I mean, what's wisdom that you can impart? Maybe something you don't see enough of at that level, or something that differentiates somebody to make them elite at the high school level.
Be self-aware. Be self-aware. And I see this, and you two have seen this for decades on, but a lot of people, when they have time to themselves and they're going to put that time towards their sport, come out and work on the favorite things that they like to do. So if I'm a shooter, I'm just going to come out and shoot some more. I'm not going to worry about trying to get quicker, stronger, faster, or free throws or whatever it is. And so same for a quarterback. If I have a big arm, I just want to go and play catch with somebody and just fire off 50 minutes or an hour worth of, you know, I may not want to work on touch. Touch gives me challenges. I don't want to bother with that today. No, you got to round it out. So whatever that weakness is or that thing that you've been told you're missing, you need to drive right into that and park and work on that and be self-aware. You know, pull feedback from your coaching staff, pull feedback from the collegiate staffs that you're shooting your tape out to. I think a lot of guys get defensive, you know, which I've kind of watched and seen just from Elite 11 to kids I've worked with to watching these guys land at places like this. You just got to be self-aware, and it only helps you put time in on your weaknesses and try and shore those up as a player. You can only be better for it.
My son was playing baseball. Coach across the way was really harsh with the kids. I didn't like his approach. He was yelling at the kids. I'm like, they're 8 years old. You got to keep them motivated. You can't yell at them. I was getting really upset. And he yelled at his son. He yelled at another kid. And I turned to the coach in the dugout with me, and I'm like, I'm going to go have a word with this guy. I'm going to talk to him. And he's like, go talk to him. I'm like, I'm going to talk to him. So in between innings, I make a beeline over to the guy. Coming in hot. I come in hot. I'm like, he's coming in hot. I was like, hey, bro. Hey, bro. I don't think I've ever used that phrase in my life. Hey, bro. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, can I have a word with you for a second? This dude's big, kind of jacked out, way bigger than me.
That was going to be my question. How big is he? How big is this guy?
Bigger than me. He's bigger than me. And he's like, he's a personal trainer. He's like, I got a word for you first. And I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. We're going to have a fight right here on the Little League field. I'll stand up for what's right.
What are your dimensions?
Okay?
Height and weight.
The guy says, I want to have a word with you first. I'm like, okay, have at it, bro. Bro, I use bro again. He says, I want to tell you something. I said, okay. He's like, I love it when you and your brother fill in for Jim Rome on the Jim Rome show.
That just diffused everything right there.
I was like, keep up the good coaching. man. And then I turned around and walked.
Describe it, what his feelings were.
So they lost to the Penguins. And I haven't seen the side of Jack yet. He's a really, really sore loser. So they lost. He did go through, you know, and give the high fives and went through, you know, the parents make a tunnel. And he did that. He wasn't happy about it, but he did it. And then it was time to do, you know, like a snack. It was their last game. And he just walked away. And I said, Jack, come on, you know, you got a snack. You got to say bye to your coaches. And we got to, you know, say bye to your teammates. He just kept walking, didn't turn his head, wouldn't look at me. Jack, come on. You know, nothing that I could say would make him turn. So, you know, I just followed him. You know, I followed him quietly, and I tried to give him, you know, positive, you know, all the great things that happened during the game. And we get in the car, and he said, just drive, Mom, just drive. So he goes, call Daddy. Call Daddy. So we called Jim, and Jim was in a meeting with a player, and so he goes, call Papa. So we called Papa Jack, and he said, I need to be the one to tell him the news. I need to tell him the news, Mom, the bad news. And I was like, okay, well. So I gave him my phone, put it on speaker, and Papa, you go from here.
I said, Jack, how'd it go? Papa, the last game. It was our last game, and guess what? We lost. And he couldn't stop. And I'm trying to, I said, well, how did it go? Did you do some good things? Did you play well? Yeah, I did. But we lost, Papa. We lost. And my heart just went out to him.
Yeah, he was crying. He was, that was a really tough one for him. And he said he's never going to get over it. And we got home, and I could tell he kind of forgot about it for a second. And because he started laughing about something. I said, oh, good, you're cheering up. He goes, oh, no. And then he wiped that smile right off his face. And he was like, I'm still really upset. I said, okay, Jack, well, we'll get him next year.
You know what I love about you? Your values. You don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal, no excuses, don't point fingers. Every single day you send that message out, and I want you to know I'm your biggest, biggest fan.
With numbing repetition.
With numbing repetition.
You're really so sweet. But I think the truth is that the reason people have longevity in the entertainment business is because they are not acting.
Yeah.
there's
that.
An honesty. You can't do it for 20-some-odd years and be projecting a phony message. I really think that the world would be a better place. America would be a better place if everybody took responsibility for what they did. You work, you raise family, you're a good citizen, you're a good neighbor, you have children that you're prepared to raise, that you're prepared to support. Then when the time comes, if you ever need them, they're there to support you. This is just the way life is supposed to be, and somehow that has gotten really screwed up. But I think that there are enough people, Jack, who long for that kind of America again, that say, you know what, at least for an hour a day, I hear somebody in a very plain speak way say, you know what, you have to be responsible for your own life. If you can't, we'll help you. If you can't, but not if you don't want to.
Yeah.
If you don't want to or prefer somebody else who's responsible for your life, that's not something that we should have to do. I don't know. Am I being too preachy?
No. Three. Beautiful. Well Three. Said.
Beautiful.
Well said.
And if you tell the truth, you don't have to have a good memory.
really, looking at your measurables, I mean, you got the banner touch last year. The last 2 years have been your best 40-yard dash time at the combine. I mean, is this a resurgence? Is this a Rich Eisen kind of, I mean, athletic resurgence?
I don't know. It's a good question. I think I'm a fine wine here. You know, I'm working on my
Benjamin
my core.
Button. Benjamin
my
Button.
My flexibility. You know, they haven't asked me to pee in a cup in a long time. So
I mean, any chance we get you to do the three cone drill, the short shuttle, or the catching balls out there? Kind of the whole NFL.
You know what? I think the sign of somebody who understands and has a sense of humility knows the limits. I think I'm just going to stick to what I know, which is running in a straight line as fast as I can. That's it. I only know one speed, as they would say.
Live your life 40 yards at a time, huh?
Well, it sounds like, I mean, just a great – I just hear it in your voice. I mean, it's a man who knows himself and great wife, great Susie Schuster, and kids, and wonderful profession. And who's got it better than Rich Eisen?
Nobody. Today's episode of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, is brought to us and brought to you by TrueCar. TrueCar is there for your car buying needs, whether it's new, whether it's used. There are over 700,000 pre-owned available vehicles from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. They've sold over 3 million vehicles already, and there are 13,000 dealers to help you save over an average of $3,000 off of the manufacturer's suggested retail price. This is the best way to go when you're looking to really make an important car buying decision, to be well-equipped with the facts, all the information that you could possibly need. Basically, what happens is once you register, you'll see the real price on actual inventory. It's competitive pricing offered to you only by a TrueCar certified dealer on a vehicle that's actually in somebody's lot. So the pricing you'll see before you go to the dealership is going to allow you to get the exact price when you show up. There's no uncertainty when you deal with TrueCar. So like I said, over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers nationwide to help you have the best car buying experience of your entire life. If you are looking to buy a car, I certainly suggest you buy through TrueCar.
Podcast One has new shows on our new app. Check out all the cool features to help you explore our exciting new programming, like America's Lakers podcast with Jay Moore, Sessions with Randy Jackson, So Random with Corinne Olympios, Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, Not Just Sports with Susie Schuster and Rich Eisen, and Sound of Success, the Dick Enberg podcast, as well as your old favorites like The Lady Gang, Steve Austin, Shaquille O'Neal, and Adam Carolla. Get the new Podcast One app in the App Store, Google Play, or PodcastOne.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Now back to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
Any favorite Stuart Scott sayings or sayings from other ESPN broadcasters? I know you worked with all the great ones.
Well, just Stuart was, you know, it's one of my favorite subjects to talk about because, you know, everybody, when he passed away just a couple of years ago, he was honored appropriately with people talking about how groundbreaking he was and how inspirational he was in his fight, and also inspirational he was as a broadcaster for a lot of young people coming up in a new millennium and how to broadcast. And I just remember being sitting next to him, and it really wasn't that way when he was doing it. When he was first broadcasting at a national stage, I got there at age 26 in 96. He was 28, had been there for just 2 years, and a lot of people thought that his style of broadcasting was not for them, and it was tough, but he stayed true blue. He never wavered. I mean, never, ever once. And I always found that just awesome to behold, and it's a great lesson for a lot of people, is you never take no for an answer, and you never waver as to what you feel in your gut. You really don't. And it was always great to to be, sit next to him. And, you know, his pop culture phrases would be lost on me, and then mine would be lost on him. I always remember the time when, you know, I did a Seinfeld reference going a commercial break, and he goes, "What was that?" And I said, "That was from Seinfeld." And he goes, "Man, no, brothers don't watch Seinfeld like that." That's what he said to me. And I always took that to understand, like, okay, look, you know, we're just coming from different parts of the pop culture landscape coming together. So,
what was the Seinfeld reference? Do you remember?
The Seinfeld, I don't remember. I did so many of them. Because that was, you know, it was the late 90s. This is when Seinfeld was huge.
Stuart Scott was cool as the other side of the pillow, right?
Yeah. And Booyah.
Stu was, he was cooler than the other side of the pillow. My favorite of his was he must be butter because he's on a roll.
Oh, that was good. That's a good all one. The time
for somebody who was, you know, scoring 50, 60 points.
Rick, you've got a phenomenal history of wrestling, and so I'd like to dig into that a little bit. I read that you wrestled in North Korea in front of almost 200,000 people.
190,000, yeah.
How was that?
Well, that would be the second thing you'd want to do in life besides be on life support. It was terrible.
It was terrible.
Terrible.
Did you meet?
Was over. I got talking to going to that thing. I went with Muhammad Ali.
Uh-huh.
And it was a peace deal, right? And we, you know, put together by, it was supposed to be me, Ted Turner, Jane Fonda, Jimmy Carter. And of course, at the end, everybody backed out. It just sent me and Ali. So, it was brutal. Took our passports, kept us 3 extra days. And then they wanted me to say something on CNN to the effect that I knew that North Korea would dominate or take control of the United States. They hate the Japanese more than us, but we're second. They hate America.
And it's close.
They hate the Japanese, first of all, but they hate America. Wow.
Did you meet Kim Jong-il?
No,
or?
I didn't.
No?
We met everybody but him. Marigold Hall is their White House, and Ali and I got invited to dinner there. And can I use the language that Ali used?
Please, it's your
on
our guest.
On your podcast?
Yes.
Okay, so you know, he never talks, right? He can talk, trust me. He always could talk. But he didn't, you know, that was his gig. So we're listening to this guy. This is at a huge banquet dinner, talking about how they can destroy the United States and hate America and all this, right? And Ali taps me on the leg and says, "No wonder we hate these son of a bitches." And I said, "Listen, you haven't talked in 3 days. Don't start talking now, please."
What year was that?
Let's get back to the hotel. 1995.
Wow.
Was it a nice country?
Yeah, it's a beautiful country, but it's so intimidating. The guy that was taking care of me, he looked at my Rolex watch, which I'd never worn, and says, I wouldn't make enough money to pay for that in 5 years. They earned like $6 American a day. That's when I was there. Their salary. I mean, it's just, you know, I wish I hadn't even taken my Rolex watch from me. Like, the guy couldn't stop talking about it.
You gave it to him?
No, I did not.
There's only one.
I've lost enough of my own without giving one away.
There's only one Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, right? And that's the Nature Boy.
Thank God.
Desmond, this is Jack Harbaugh. I still see today the Heisman pose that has become such a classic moment for the Heisman Trophy and for University of Michigan football. When was that plan in your mind devised? When was that thought out?
It was spontaneous. It was something I did, you know, at the spur of the moment. I think that what happened, Jack, was I actually, you know, that whole year, I never did anything when I scored. And I scored a lot of touchdowns that year, but I never did anything except, you know, hand the ball to the official and turn around and celebrate it with my teammates. And that was just the way we did things. And I remember during the season, and once I became a front runner for the Heisman, a couple of my teammates said, "Hey, man, you got to do something. You get in the end zone, you got to do something," like, you know. But you know, the problem was in college sports, you couldn't do anything. You couldn't really celebrate without getting a flag, and I wasn't going to do anything to, you know, to get a penalty. So I just brushed it off, and I just, you know, I always did like the Barry Sanders, just act like you've been there before,
hand
it
to the official.
And,
yeah.
turn around and celebrate with my teammates. But as I said earlier, born and raised in Cleveland, understood the importance of this game, the importance of the rivalry. I knew that I wanted to do something special if I got in the end zone, but what I actually wanted to do was do a backflip at the end zone. That's what I wanted to do. I practiced. I'm telling you, Jack, I practiced the off season. You know, this gymnast, she taught me how to do a backflip, amongst other things. And so I'm looking at this punter, Ohio State's punter, and now I'm trying to decide, Jack, okay, am I really going to do this backflip? Like, am I? I lied to you not. And then as I'm going down Ohio State's sideline about to score, like, it's like a mental Armageddon. I'm like, should I do it? No. Yes. If you do it and mess up, then you're sports center for the wrong thing. Like, this is going through my head. And so I got inside the 5-yard line. And if I was going to do it, I wanted to, like, kind of stop at the 1 and then flip into the end zone. That would have been, like, you know, the thing to do. And so once I got into the 5 and then my momentum was carrying me and I understood I wasn't about to stop and do this backflip, then as I crossed the goal line, it just spontaneously, I just did that pose. Boom. And then that was it. And then, you know, that was all she wrote.
Who would have ever thunk that it would take on the life that it has?
No, you're 100% right. Yeah. It has taken on such an incredible life that the photographer who actually took the picture sued me for the picture. How crazy is that? That's how much of a life it has taken on itself. So that's crazy. It's bananas.
That's how'd that work? How'd you get sued for what happened?
That's another podcast, my friend.
Long story.
we don't have time.
Still has legal ramifications.
You can Google it.
All right.
Well, I tell you what, the three of us have never been blessed with enough speed to think about what we're going to do once we get in the end zone as we're running down the sideline. I was always panicked. Like, am I going to get there before somebody catches me? Right, Coach? I mean, you remember any touchdowns of yours, Coach? Remember?
Never. No. There's not one of them. Not one of them. Didn't have as many, maybe as you or Desmond, but no, not a one where I was thinking about what I was going to do. Did not have the speed or to do it.
The creativity.
The creativity.
I recognize that,
So that's a whole different level, I think, that we're talking about. I learned something yesterday, and was recruiting a young man. Can't say his name, but whenever his mom talked, I mean, he was locked on her with his eyes. I mean, nodding. He was listening to every word she said. He didn't speak when she was talking. And then I was like blown away by it. Cause you talked about it earlier. You see some youngsters that their mom or dad starts talking and they roll their eyes. Oh, that's not right. That's, you know, or they kind of walk away. And this youngster was the best I've ever seen. And then I just was watching him after that, no matter who was talking to him, no matter if it was a professor that was talking to him or a coach that was talking to him. I mean, the respect that he showed to his mom, I mean, he showed to everybody that was talking to him. And it's a virtue. And I was like, man, I can do better. I can do better at that. You know, when my wife's talking or my kids are talking or players talking to me or something. It's just what you learn is amazing. Almost what you learn, how much you learn, each one of those visits is amazing.
You know, the thing you find out, too, is how much these young people care about their moms and their grandmothers and their families in general. But a lot of times it'll be, well, what's your why? And a kid's 18 and 17. He's not ready to even think about that. But I've had parents cry and kids cry in front of me when the kid looks at the mom and says, I don't want her to ever have to work again.
Yeah.
And everybody's crying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for. And I said, you know, you love your mom. I said to him, we'll stop. And we settle. And I said, now, you understand, if you come with me, I'm never going to forget what we just went through. And that if you act like you don't want to practice, I'm going to ask, I thought you loved your mom. I thought you were, you're not loving her today? So today is your off day with your mom. Oh, I tell them that in the home. That's why I probably don't get everybody. I say stuff like, oh, you may not be built for this. What? Yeah, what are you talking about? I said, I'm just telling you, this stuff's crazy here. You want to shoot every ball or do this, you got to come in here and share and compete and battle, and we're everybody's Super Bowl.
How do you be funny? What's the secret, Adam? Break it down for us.
I think you have to be ignored almost your entire childhood. So I think it's a combination of some base intelligence and then a atmosphere of being completely ignored by everyone in your family, mixed with no basic cable and does not function in the educational system you're in. And those ingredients put together and baked just right most times creates a serial killer, but every once in a while you get someone with a sense of humor.
Do you mean to tell me that the millennials are screwed? You said no television. I mean, everybody's got basic cable now, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's weird. I have 11-year-old twins, and it's not uncommon for me to walk into my son's room while his TV set is on, and he's staring at his phone on his on his bunk bed. So, yes, they're screwed. And listen, we know I just got out of a freezing cold shower because I start every morning by taking a freezing cold shower so I can inflict the little pain into my life, because otherwise I just move from an air-conditioned house into an air-conditioned car into an air-conditioned office, and there is no diversity or adversity. So I need to inflict this. It's something I've learned. It's something you guys know about, but I don't know if my son and daughter are going to embrace. Life works the exact same way as football works, which is, you know, some God-given ability doesn't hurt, but that's not worth squat if you're not willing to put in the time and the sweat. And you can overcome a lot by just, you know, living in the weight room and the film room and, you know, being the first in and the last out and all. You'd be surprised how good a player you can kind of mold yourself into. And I don't think that's any different in any from any other aspect of life. I mean, there's a few kind of fringy kind of jobs, you know, like a jazz musician or an NBA forward, where it's like, well, you got to have it. Either you got it or you don't. And even then, you have to work your ass off. But almost everything else, you just outwork everybody, and you'll be fine.
Beautifully said, my friend.
There's no doubt about it. Even the most talented people in sports, in any sport I've come across, but just football because that's the one I know the best, the ones that are even the most talented who, as soon as the meeting's over, you know, they're gone. They're not thinking about it anymore. Or as soon as practice is over, I mean, they can't wait to hit the shower and then leave and get on to something else. You know, don't do the homework. Don't do the extra things and don't work at it. I think it's just going to come by al natural or by osmosis. I mean, they get eliminated. They get eliminated from the game of football. And as you're saying, I mean, it's across all livelihoods. It totally resonates with me.
Yeah, it's the only real truth there is, and I don't get why it's not preached enough. You know, there's a lot of who you know, and that guy got lucky.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody sent me a fortune cookie, and I'll paraphrase, but the fortune in the fortune cookie, somebody tweeted it to me, and it said, the man who does more than he's paid for will soon be paid more for what than he works. Essentially, it's like you work for free, you do more than you need to do, and at some point you'll be getting paid more than for what you're doing. And man, you want to talk about that showbiz. Yep. That is show business. I mean, I, you know, Jimmy Kimmel, when I met that guy, was, you know, a local radio station doing the sports, writing the bits, coming in at 4 a.m, producing the Christmas album, recording stuff, working with me. When I met him, he would meet me at 5 a.m. and edit my stuff and do stuff. Never asked for an extra penny, just worked his butt off. And now, you know, he's got his name on stuff as a producer. He's getting checks in the mail. He doesn't even have to show up. You know what I mean? Like, what he did, it's a very interesting thing. What he did with me was, I was just this young guy, and he got me into radio. He worked with me. He worked for free. He never was compensated. He took money out of his own pocket. And then at some point, later on, I signed a big fat radio contract, and he got, I don't know, $1 million a year for just staying home, like just for being like having his name on it, like, you know, being a consultant or something. So that's the payoff.
I'm sure
nobody wants to work for free.
Yeah, it's I think what you're saying, what I'm hearing and where I'm interpreting it is, I mean, this is the way it's always been for all of time, whether you go back to Neanderthal days, you know, you had a group, or, you know, you're in a tribe, you're on a team, you're in an organization. You got to learn the ways of the group, the ways of the team, and then you got to learn how to become an asset.
Yeah.
And once you're an asset, then a contributor, a positive member of the team and the group, and that's making it. You know, that's
things come to you.
Your life is better.
The nose hair pulling story at the optometrist, Jack, if you wouldn't mind teeing that up.
The story goes back to Stanford, visiting, and Jim invites me into a recruiting meeting at Stanford, and he had put together this 16-page, I mean, I've never seen anything like it, position by position and height and weight and speed and academics. And, I mean, it was a meeting with the staff and all the recruiting people, and I'm sitting in there and I'm reading and I'm going through there and I'm thinking, I've never seen anything like this with the depth that it had. So Jim said, come on, we're going to run. I got to go to the optometrist. I think he had some laser surgery on his eyes and he had to get them checked, and we were going to go. So we're in the car and we're strapped up and we're driving along. Okay,
before just make a note here on the story, that meeting was a knockdown, drag out type of meeting with all the staff and multiple players that we were watching on tape and evaluated, and it got heated on more than a couple occasions. The one that stands out the most was Zach Ertz.
I forgot about that.
Who was we were watching, and he was young in his high school career. He was a junior,
local prospect, right?
Local prospect, etc. And disagreement in the staff meeting about what kind of player he was, and back and forth it went. I won't say the coach that was
protect the innocent.
Protect the innocent. Stories to protect the innocent was against him. Was completely. It was a defensive coach, and he was completely against Zach Ertz. And do you remember that?
I do. I didn't remember it was Zach, but I do remember the discussion.
We put the tape back on, and you know, one coach, and he had a couple other that were kind of starting to side with him, and you know, that was one of those heated deals. And finally, I just said, "We are taking him. We are offering him a scholarship right now. He's a junior. I've seen him play basketball. I mean, you can see the loose hips. You can see the way he runs and the frame and the upside." And that was, I had to make one of those executive decisions that, but it was, we were already leaving the meeting after a knockdown, drag out argument. Ended up being very productive because Zach Ertz did come to Stanford. He did have a great college career. He's playing professional football. So don't have to say who was right on that particular argument. But that's how we're leaving this. Good. It was a.
It's a great point taken to show the state of mind that you were in.
That we're both in.
That you were in. Not me. I wasn't in quite the state of mind you were, as the story will show. So we're in the car now, strapped up, and he says, "What'd you think?" I said, "That's a great meeting. That might have been the greatest recruiting meeting that I've ever seen. And this document, I had it. This document you have put together is unbelievable." I said, "The only thing I would suggest is that, you know, you're recruiting X number of offensive linemen and you're only recruiting X number of corners. I think you need more corners on the list and fewer offensive linemen." A suggestion. And what do you want to do? You just want to play with all defensive backs? You don't want offensive linemen to be under? I said, "No, I didn't say that. You're going to need some, but, you know, you might have a few more." "Oh, that's what you think, huh?" So we're driving along.
Well, I mean, again, there's a little more discussion about that. It didn't go right to that. I mean,
It built to that.
I mean, okay. I mean, I think Jack Harbaugh made the statement that you should never recruit a high school offensive lineman. They should be a defensive lineman. They should be a tight end, you know, a wide receiver that bulks up and becomes a tight end and then becomes an offensive lineman. And I said, I think there's a place for that. There's a place for that, but you do need offensive linemen. You do need guys. You need to recruit offensive linemen like David DeCastro, who we were recruiting at the time, and Jonathan Martin, guys that are actually offensive linemen who've already, you know, already matured to that, you know, frame, a 6'5", 6'4 and a half, 6'6", and 275, 280 pounds. I mean, they can't expect that all offensive linemen are going to be 220 and 6.
I've totally changed my thinking on that. You're exactly right. And I was wrong, and you were right. So we're driving down the road now, and now he misses the turn. He's got to turn right, and he missed it. Now you made me miss my turn. I said, I'm not driving.
We were in a heated discussion.
I said, I'm not driving. I've never been there. I don't know how to get there. How did I make you miss your turn? You made me miss the turn. So now we go in, and we turn around, and we go to the place, the eye doctor place, and we go in there, and we're sitting, and he goes up to the receptionist, and he said, Jim Harbaugh, I'm here for, got to get my checkup. And she said, well, doctor will be with you in about 5 minutes. You go over there and sit. So we're sitting over there, and he's just glaring at me.
You're not civil. You guys are just kind of
silent.
No,
we're not talking.
Okay.
It's gone from the place of, you missed a turn, to we're both just looking at each other in silence.
Well, another part of that discussion,
okay,
why we're driving is, the discussion about corners. And Dad has a great point. I mean, his point is, I mean, a team full of guys that are 6 foot and they're point guards. Was 6 foot point guards, as many point guards as you can possibly recruit. You know, they're 6 foot tall and they're point guards.
Safety.
That they can play corner and that they mature more. You know, they become a safety and a safety becomes a linebacker and a linebacker that becomes a defensive lineman and a defensive lineman that becomes an offensive lineman.
So, that's kind of where I think I took that
point. Wow.
And it was a great point.
With somewhat of a reach, okay, from corner to offensive lineman. Yeah. There's a possibility.
Athleticism, and but back and forth. And it's like, well, how many point guard? I mean, how many? At some point, you got to have some.
How much is too much?
Yeah, let's have some. I also like length. I like guys that are athletic and long and, you know, six.
That's about the time I heard.
We missed our turn.
So now it was
going back and forth.
Okay. You know? So now fast forward, we're in the office, and
he's making this sound like I'm just snapping back. I'm acknowledging that
some snap back on my part.
There's a lot of snap back on your part as well. And I was acknowledging that it was a very, you know, it was a good discussion and a great point. And but it was getting
heated.
It was getting heated.
So we're in the office.
And we missed the turn.
And the reception is over there working. You can see this kind of her eyes and the top of her head over the shelf, you know.
Any good receptionist.
And she's doing her work. She's in there doing her work. And Jim is just glaring at me. We're not talking. He's got his eyes have kind of glazed over.
We hadn't talked in about 10 minutes.
We hadn't talked. We didn't talk since we got out of the car. We walked. He went over there. I sat down.
True.
Where was this going to go? He sat down right across from him. I'm looking at him. His eyes are glaring over and his lips are kind of quivering. And he goes, that's it. That's it. I can't take it anymore. And like that, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness. He gets up out of his chair. He walks over to me.
I think I was already standing there. I was already standing there. don't say, I grabbed it.
You grabbed me right around the neck.
No, I did not grab you around the neck.
He grabbed me right around the neck, and I'm going, oh, my God. He's going to punch me. And he reaches up into my nose and pulls out the nose hairs in my nose. And you know how your eyes start to water? I'm saying, my. He said, I've had it. I can't look at those nose hairs anymore.
Not where I thought that was going.
And now the receptionist goes, oh, my goodness. And she looks. She comes up over, and she's looking. He's got me in the headlock, and he's pulling them out. My eyes are watering. And I'm thinking, well, she's going to call 911. We're going to get arrested.
Now, okay, embellished, true, but embellished. Did not get him in headlock. I was standing next to him in front of the receptionist because we're both there. I was there to get it. That was the eye doctor. Yeah, you'd said that. All I said was, Dad, wait a second. Here, let me help you here. I didn't put you in a headlock. I just reached up with my right hand.
Now,
pulled out about 12 rose hairs that were, I mean, they're long, very long, very long and visible, you know.
I know you got them.
As a third party, I do want to say that going from that tense standoff to, hey, Dad, can I do you a favor and help you out, and pulling the nose hairs, it seems more like Jack's version of the story could be more true.
There was no headlock. No.
I'm here to tell you, look at
there
it right
was
here.
No headlock.
The people out there can't see this, but I want you to describe what I'm doing. I am crossing my heart.
He's crossing his heart.
and saying there was no headline.
I'm crossing my heart saying there was no headline.
The truth as it is remembered by Coach Jim and Coach Jack.
Thank you for listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.